Tonight on the Daily Debrief, an arrest in a 39-year-old Iowa murder case, and a man accused of murdering 8 people in Ohio appears in court. Also, a judge keeps a case alive against movie mogul Harvey Weinstein. Plus,
she's a lovely person. She's a single mom. She's an absolutely gorgeous model.
Black China's celebrity attorney pushes a lawsuit against the Kardashians and others in front of a jury. That's tonight on the Daily Debrief for Thursday, December 20th. Good evening, everybody. On behalf of the panel and myself, welcome to the Daily Debrief. An arrest tonight in an Iowa murder case dating all the way back to 1979. 18-year-old Michelle Marie Martinko died on this day 39 years ago. Her body turned up in her family's car in a shopping mall parking lot. She was at the mall to buy a new winter coat. She'd been stabbed at least 8 times, including in the face, but she was not sexually assaulted, and she was not robbed. Defensive wounds indicate she fought back against her attacker. Suspect Jerry Lynn Burns is now under arrest. Police believe he cut his hand and left blood behind at the scene. Authorities say a DNA test all these years later linked Burns to the crime. Police Chief Wayne German of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, joins us live on the Daily Debrief tonight. Chief, good evening.
How are you?
I'm well, Chief. This has been a long time in coming. I assume there must be a huge sense of relief on behalf of your department and your community.
That's correct. Both the police department and the community of Cedar Rapids is very much relieved that we solved this case and there's someone under arrest for committing this crime.
Your department collected blood at the scene way back in 1979, and DNA testing has been around for a number of years here. So how was it that you were suddenly able to make the link between this suspect and this victim all these years later in 2018?
In 2006, we were able to confirm that there was blood that was going to be attributed to the assailant, and we submitted it to the DCI laboratory, and they developed a DNA profile, and that was in 2006. We continued to work an assorted number of leads, and then in May of 2017, we reached out to Parabon Labs to seek their assistance in developing the composite sketches that they were known to be able to conduct, and that developed 100 or so more leads. We exhausted all those leads, and we continued to work the case, specifically Investigator Denlinger and others in the cold case unit. And without getting into too many of the facts that I'm unable to divulge this time, a profile and a suspect was developed with Mr. Burns.
So that's how you were led to this particular defendant here. Let me ask you a couple of questions about the facts of the case. The lack of a sexual assault, as I understand it, the lack of a robbery, the stab wounds to the victim's face, they suggested, at least according to local reports, that this attack was personal in nature. Do you believe that to be the case, and if so, why?
That's really kind of speculation from the previous 39 years worth of media reports. And unfortunately, I can't get into a lot more of the details of the investigation. The fact that there were some extremely severe wounds would lead someone to think that. But again, this is still an active investigation, and we're continuing to work different angles.
Are you able to confirm whether or not the victim and the defendant knew one another?
No, I'm unfortunately, I can't get into that that bit of information.
I understand. I know many departments struggle to find the resources to stay on top of cold cases like this while still dealing with the daily grind of law enforcement. What's your philosophy on those cold cases in general, and how did you how did you give resources to this case to make sure it was solved?
Well, the investigators treat every single case. You know, they're all unique. They're all different. And this case, again, was 39 years old. And when the primary investigator learned about Parabon and some of the abilities, we wanted to explore their capabilities, and fortunately, things developed and where we're at today.
You're there today. Okay, well, Chief, we appreciate you joining us tonight on The Debrief, and thanks again for the insight.
Okay, Aaron, thank you. Have a good night.
You as well. A hearing today to report in the so-called Pike County Massacre in Ohio. Eight members of the Roden family were killed there on April 22, 2016. Authorities believe the execution-style killings occurred after months of meticulous planning. According to court documents, the state believes the motive was a child custody battle. Victim Hannah Roden was the mother of a child fathered by one of the suspects. Four members of the Wagner family, each charged with eight counts of aggravated murder and other crimes related to the case, all could face the death penalty if they're convicted. Authorities found very little forensic evidence at the scenes of the crimes, but prosecutors say other evidence links the four suspects to the deaths. That other evidence includes cell phone data, evidence that the suspects monitored the victims online and through cameras. The suspects are also accused of making a silencer to conceal the shootings. Suspect Edward Jake Wagner was in court today. His child with one of the victims is said to be the center of the dispute. His attorneys argued five motions, but first, the defendant speaks.
Mr. Wagner, we usually like to ask, have you had an opportunity that you feel a sufficient opportunity as you go along to discuss your case with your attorneys here?
Yes, Your Honor.
And are you satisfied with the effort that they're making on your behalf and the work that they're doing on your behalf?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
And now to the series of five motions that were argued today. Here are three of the most important ones.
The third filing was a defense motion for a bill of particulars. It's the court's understanding that the state will be deciphering that and looking at it. It's rather lengthy, 25 pages it looks like, and attempting to make response and or objection to that, I understand. And based upon the state's response, if there is not a response made that satisfies the defense, then we'll be arguing that on the 24th of January. Is that correct?
It is, Your Honor. That's our understanding.
All right. Okay. Item number four, defendant's motion to prevent the accused to appear in civilian clothing as he is today, and it says without restraints. The court understands that the state does not oppose the part of the motion that requests that the defendant be permitted to appear at hearings in this case in civilian clothing. Is that correct?
It is, Your Honor.
And that part of the motion will be granted. The court will defer ruling on that part that requests that the defendant appear without restraints. The court will direct, however, that the Pike County Sheriff's Office make inquiry concerning restraint devices that may be available to that office and report that to the court as soon as possible, so the court will have that information in ruling on that part of the motion. Item number five, motion to restrain certain parties from discussing the case with the accused. It's my understanding that counsel for each side will be working with each other in order to determine whether an agreement can be reached concerning what restraints should be placed. Specifically, we already have a gag order, which is applies to a different thing, really, but as to whether or not what conversations or who should be permitted or restrained, I guess I should say, from conversing with the defendant on the subject matter of the case is really the subject matter of number five here, and it's my understanding the attorneys will be attempting to draft a proposed agreed order concerning that, and if there's no agreement, then we'll be arguing that also no later than January 25, and if we need to argue it sooner than that, the court will make time to do that.
That's our understanding. Thank you, sir.
Joining me tonight are Judge Ashley Wilcott and criminal defense attorney Mike Korobanics. Mike, let me start with you. The first motion was for a bill of particulars. I've sat in the chair of having to write oppositions to them. Why does the defense almost always ask for a bill of particulars?
Well, I'm not a big fan of them because you usually have a very good layout by the charging documents. I think sometimes for the bill of particulars, you're actually helping the prosecutor put this case together by saying where you're going to think their case is weak. So some people do it just as a matter of course. I don't think you do anything as a matter of course, and you really need to have a strategy to it.
Does it force the state into following a particular line or theory in a case from early on?
Yes, it does, but it also lays out where you're going and where you think their case is weak. So I think you have to use a balancing act. I mean, you really have to communicate with your client, do your own investigation, and see, because always the burden's on them. So I don't see why you want to give them a map.
Double-edged sword. Judge Wilcott, the defendant, appearing in civilian clothing today. This is a pretrial hearing, no jury present. Usually we see that much later on in a proceeding when a jury is present. His attorneys were worried about that, and they are worried about it early on in this case.
Yes, absolutely. And I think in this case, the state did the right thing. Instead of fighting that battle, they said, look, we're going to agree to that. He can wear civilian clothing. Why not take that off the table? Don't set it up for appeals and prejudicial, even at this stage of the game. Let's get it out of the way.
Mike, one more question for you. The motion to restrain certain parties from asking about this case involves the various attorneys for the various defendants. There are multiple defendants here, again, four primary defendants facing the most serious capital charges, and some other relatives facing lesser charges. They don't want the attorneys talking to the other defendants here. What's your analysis of that? Is it a smart move?
I think it's a dangerous move because I can't see how you can restrain somebody from setting up their defense and not communicating. People are free to speak to who they want to with the defense. But the court and the state should never get involved in that because I really think it sets up a claim for ineffective assistance of counsel because your Sixth Amendment's violated.
Judge Wilcott, your opinion?
I agree. The same thing. I don't understand what their thinking was in asking for that in the first place. Just don't know.
Curious opinions. We're going to move along now. Jury selection continuing in another case we're planning to cover here on the Law and Crime Network. This is the case of Jeremiah Monell of New Jersey, and he's accused of stabbing his wife to death and leading police on a manhunt after the stabbing. Victim Tara O'Shea Watson died in December 2016. Opening statements are scheduled for January 3rd after this case, after the holidays, rather. If convicted, Jeremiah Monell faces life without parole. He did reject a 30-year plea deal. New details tonight in the case of Molly Tibbetts, the Iowa woman whose disappearance and death captured national attention. Newly unsealed search warrants reveal that four men were the subjects of police interest during the weeks leading up to the discovery of Tibbetts' body. The men included a farmer with a history of stalking women, an acquaintance who erased his cell phone data, a man who ditched his car near Brooklyn, Iowa, and a neighbor seen washing his car hours before Tibbetts was last seen. The Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation ruled the four men out as suspects as their investigation unfolded. Christian Rivera, the man you see there, eventually turned himself into police and led police to Tibbetts' body. A New York judge today decided that the case against former movie mogul Harvey Weinstein will move along. Weinstein was accused of a series of crimes against women, including rape and forcible oral sex. Prosecutors already dismissed one count because evidence appeared to contradict one of the women's stories. A New York police detective also landed in trouble for withholding evidence in the case. Joining us tonight in the Law and Crime newsroom is senior legal editor and former New York prosecutor Ron Blitzer. He attended the hearing earlier today. So, Ron, the defense argument basically attempted to throw everything out because of those two issues with the contradictory story and the New York police detective's issues.
Yes. The defense for Harvey Weinstein was trying to argue that because there had been, you know, some exculpatory evidence that possibly was not turned over and that there had been, you know, some behavior from one of the detectives that, you know, affected the case, that as a result, the entire case should be thrown out. Judge Burke disagreed with this, refused to dismiss the rest of the case, and said that the remaining counts that the prosecutors did not dismiss should be able to move forward.
Look, if the cases have independent evidence, that makes sense. This was a short hearing, but it did send a message that the judge wants to keep things on the tracks. So what's next after this?
So, yeah, it was a brief hearing. Most of it was not on the record, but the judge said that moving forward, the next pretrial hearing will take place on March 7th.
Ron Blitzer in the Law and Crime newsroom, thanks for the update tonight. A judge has ruled that a celebrity lawsuit involving some of the Kardashians, Blac Chyna, Kris, and Kylie Jenner will go before a Los Angeles jury. The civil case involves accusations that Jenner and Kim and Khloe Kardashian unlawfully plotted to kill season two of the show Rob and Chyna. Blac Chyna suffered substantial financial losses, the suit claims. A judge in the case is also forcing the E! Network to turn over documents related to the case, despite a claim by the network that the documents contained trade secrets. Celebrity attorney Lisa Bloom, who represents Blac Chyna, appeared today on the Law and Crime Network.
Ultimately, we got what we wanted, which is the requirement that the other side and some third parties like the network and the production company turn over a lot of documents to us. They had asked that we pay like $100,000 for the documents, which was ridiculous. We resisted that. Of course, we don't have to pay anything. The judge ruled they just have to give us those documents for free, just like every other litigant here in California. And we got a trial date, which is in February of 2020 for this case. This is an important case to us. We have represented Blac Chyna for about a year and a half, ever since she was the victim of a very vicious revenge porn rant on social media from her ex, Rob Kardashian. And when we looked into it, we discovered that the Kardashian-Jenner family had plotted to kill her successful show, Rob and Chyna. And, you know, it's just as illegal for them to do it as it is for anybody else. If you know somebody has a contract and they have particular rights under that contract, for example, for a second season of a show, you can't unlawfully interfere with that contract. And if you do, you can be hauled into court and have to pay civil damages for doing that. And that's what the case is all about.
And still ahead tonight on the Daily Debrief, Salvation Army bell ringers are part of the holiday season. You may have even seen one tonight, but one could be in legal trouble after an incident outside a Walmart. We will explain. Plus, a break in the 8-year-old cold case of a missing Florida woman. Details are after the break here on the Daily Debrief. Welcome back to the Debrief, folks. Let's head straight to Anthony Velez with our daily recap of criminal incidents making headlines.
Here are today's top crime stories trending on LawAndCrime.com and across the country. Authorities in Michigan released body camera footage of a quick-thinking officer saving a woman from a sinking vehicle by grabbing a kayak from a nearby home. Sergeant Stephen Lyons is seen snapping into action to save the unidentified 53-year-old woman, commandeering a kayak to paddle out to the vehicle. The woman was taken to a local hospital and did not sustain serious injuries. Investigators in California are offering a $50,000 reward for information leading to the arrest of a suspect seen fatally stabbing and robbing a homeless man on surveillance footage in November. The incident occurred in Los Angeles, and the victim, 58-year-old Hernando Perez, died from the multiple stab wounds he suffered during the attack. Investigators are now looking for this man and woman in connection with the attack. Police in Florida confirmed the human remains found last week in Miami Gardens are those of a woman missing since 2010. The victim, 40-year-old Linda Meyer, disappeared after leaving her Hollandale Beach home in June 2010. Her body was discovered after investigators received an anonymous tip leading them to Miami Gardens. A cause of death is not yet known, but authorities consider Meyer's killing a homicide. Those were today's top crime stories. I'm Anthony Velez for the Daily Debrief.
A Florida man is charged with duping a school district in another state out of a lot of money. 61-year-old Donald Howard Conkright is charged with wire fraud in federal court. Authorities say Conkright wrote to a Texas school district and claimed to be with a construction firm with whom the district had done business. Conkright is then said to have provided bank account information to the district. The district, in turn, wired Conkright's account two payments totaling nearly $2 million. The money obviously was supposed to go to the construction firm. Conkright is said to have used the money on a BMW and Rolex watches. A Salvation Army bell ringer may spend the holidays behind bars after attacking a customer. Police believe the bell ringer ingested PCP and began to attack a number of customers, in fact, outside a Maryland Walmart. Witnesses said the bell ringer appeared agitated, shouted obscenities, and wandered into the parking lot traffic before punching a customer in the face. Officers responded to the scene after the bell ringer stopped taking donations and reportedly licked and huffed vials that appeared to contain an oil solution. An order from a federal judge in Houston, Texas, is drawing quite the reaction this week. Judge Vanessa Gilmore recently penned this response to some displeasurable event in her courtroom. Quote, "The court is in receipt of the parties' whiny letters. What is wrong with you parties' lawyers? Just stop it." The next quote, "There will be no extension granted on the motion deadline. Don't ask. The next one, this is my oldest and least favorite case. Please stop trying to become my least favorite lawyers. And then happy holidays to soften it up. The judge signed it and the clerk filed it. Judge Ashley Wilcott, defense attorney Mike Karabanek, still in the studio here tonight. So Judge Wilcott, is she saying what you sometimes wish you could say, or would this not even cross your mind?
No, it would cross your mind because you do get frustrated. This case is a very old case and there are big firms representing these clients in this case. But professionalism, ethics, as a judge, you can't always say what you're thinking. Here's a good example.
Mike Karabanek, what do you think? If you were on the bench, would you say this? And maybe I should ask it a different way. If you received this, what would go through your mind?
I think there's nothing wrong with humor to get a message across, and I don't think you'll have to worry about me being on the bench.
not planning to run anytime soon. Okay, well, no competition. I know you're in different states, normally separated by the geographical boundary, but look, this judge apparently has a reputation for being, how shall we say it? She wrote a book and referred to herself as a, quote, judicial diva. So she kind of has this personality in court, you know, this personality of being kind of spunky, whatnot. And I guess this fits with that.
And you can have a personality in court, even as the judge. The thing I will say that I appreciate, she's direct, and she sent a very clear message. Stop with the delays. We're going forward.
Mike Karabanek, what do you think? Okay, judicial diva, do you want to be in front of a judicial diva, or would you be filing some kind of ethics complaint about the judge?
I think as long as the message is clear and it's good-hearted, we should all learn to laugh a little more and not take things so seriously. But if you file an ethics complaint, you're definitely going to be your least favorite lawyer.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that'll open up that gateway. Okay, and I can tell from the look on your face that you kind of want to be in front of this judge.
It's my kind of judge.
Because you'd be saying, oh, Your Honor, I agree with you. I want to move this case along. It's my opponent who keeps stalling things. I've been trying to call up my opponent. I've been trying to do everything. I know that's what you're thinking.
You've read my transcripts.
I can tell exactly what you're up to here. So, well, we're just about out of time on the Daily Debrief for tonight. Dare I ask about the bell ringer, Salvation Army bell ringer?
Well, you know, we were talking earlier, and every angel, when a bell rings, every angel gets his wings. If I didn't get that misquote wrong or that quote wrong, and maybe this is one of those cases, he certainly got his wings. He should have flown away.
All right. Well, look, let's wrap up. Thanks a lot for being with us, Judge, Attorney. It's all the time we have on the Debrief. Live trial coverage begins tomorrow at 9 a.m. here on Law and Crime.